Welcome to Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias. We're on a busy street corner in downtown Miami to read poetry.
Good morning. My name is Scott Cunningham, and I'm the founder and executive director of O Miami. And the mission of O Miami...
We set up a lectern and a microphone. Traffic flies by on Biscayne Boulevard. A jackhammer pounds away somewhere. People slow down to watch. We look like we might be protesting something obscure.
So we've been asking for zip codes every... Hey, how you doing? We've been asking.
Somebody honks in support. Behind us, a towering billboard reads, "Your poem here." It's almost April, and that means it's time for poetry to pop up in unexpected places throughout Miami-Dade County, thanks to O Miami. The Poetry Foundation floods the county with guerrilla poetry all month, where you least expect it. On a water tower in Miami Beach, on fake parking tickets in Coral Gables, on this billboard across from the Miami Heat Arena. We're here to kick things off with zip codes. They're quick little poems about the zip code where you live. Each number tells you how many words you get to use in each line. This year, the best zip code will end up on this billboard for all of April. I'll read mine to get y'all started. So today the zip code that I'm going to read is my zip code. It's 33134, which if you're from down here, you know is the Coral Gables zip code. But I live on the Miami side. And things on the Miami side are a little different than the Coral Gables side in 33134. See the chicken in that bag? Santeria. Don't touch it. Miami has its rules. Thank you. You've got till today, March 22nd, to send in your own zip ode. Find out more information on how to do it on our social media or WLRN.org. I asked the founder of the festival, poet P. Scott Cunningham, to follow me back to the studio after our little publicity stunt. I wanted to ask him how he got the idea for this kind of radical festival. Also about some of the other weird places we'll find poetry in April, and to ask him why he never writes his own zip odes. Well, Scott, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We like hustled back from the corner of Biscayne and 8th.
Yeah.
I was joking that it looked like we were there for like a rally to save Lolita.
It definitely had the feeling of something that of a protest, of we were upset about something and we were going to try and change it with just like the 8 of us.
Well, that's we are kind of upset. Like that's that can be the nature of zip odes, right?
It can be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of the best zip odes are people just airing their grievances for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to kind of, you know, walk outside and see all the things that aggravate you, and that's poetry, right?
It can be. It can be.
So, just talking about O Miami a little bit and Poetry Month, I've heard you say that it's your goal that people encounter poetry somewhere. People in Miami will encounter poetry somewhere in the month of April. Like everybody will encounter poetry. And you say you hope to fail well is what I've heard you say more than once. It's a pretty good goal, though.
Yeah, I think the goal itself is poetic, you know. It's somewhat unattainable, unprovable. but I think it's a good organizing principle for everything we do, because it forces us to think about, okay, well, you know, are we doing anything in West Kendall? Are we doing anything in Miami Gardens? Are we doing, you know, and just really think about the whole of Miami and what that might look like to do a month-long initiative that truly is trying for everyone to encounter a poem.
Right. I think you guys have a very specific way of tapping into people. I think of it as like guerrilla poetry, you know, like poetry where you don't expect it, where it sneaks up on you. And I love that about it. You know, I think in past years we've seen it, like I've seen it personally in urinals, in public mirrors, you know, certainly walking down the street. And the zip codes is a really cute idea because it really forces you to look around where you live. And my neighborhood, okay, I'm in 33134, mm-hmm. right? And 33134, folks who live there usually know it because that's Coral Gables. Mm-hmm. It's like this perfect north-south strip. Mm-hmm. But there's this tiny little wedge up north that is Miami. And let me tell you, that wedge of 33134 is very different.
I believe it.
Because we have chickens and Santeria, which both play into my zip code pretty prominently.
Yeah, I don't think they allow that in Coral Gables.
No, they'll chase you out for that. And it taught me that doing it, and especially hearing other people's, it taught me about different areas of Miami.
Did
you find yourself doing that? Like, as you read zip codes that you're like, where is this and where am I hearing from?
Absolutely. I mean, but the festival as a whole has taught me so much about Miami. I mean, I often say that, you know, the journey of the festival and the fun part of it is learning that you never know anything about Miami, that there's always another surprise around the corner and someone who just reveals something to you. They're like, well, I had no idea that that happened here or that existed. And that's the joy of living here. And that's the joy of trying to reach everybody with a poem in April.
And that Miami changes. And that hearing that same zip code told by 10 different people, you get 10 different stories.
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing, one cool thing about the forum as well, is that it does create sort of a map of the city, a different kind of map, an emotional map of what people are actually feeling and what their concerns are in their particular neighborhoods. And yeah, that is always going to be changing. That'll never be stagnant.
And one thing that I found curious, though, is, I mean, you know, we're all challenged to do Zippodes this time of year. You guys have this amazing billboard where, like, you can win a chance to have your Zippode put up there, and you don't write Zippodes. What is up with that?
I didn't say I don't write them. I said I don't write them well. I just, you know, even though we came up with this form, it's a really hard one for me. I don't know why. I mean, because it's funny, because I actually really like poetic form. I enjoy form. I enjoy restraint. I like when the poem is forcing me to make choices that I don't want to make. But for whatever reason, and maybe it's just because I've heard so many good ones that I'm intimidated by what other people have done with the forum, you know, that I just feel like, wow, I don't have anything to contribute.
Do you still get intimidated? Do you get intimidated like that? I mean, you're a poet, for God's sake.
I mean, that's all I do is get intimidated.
That's the nature of your poetry. That's right. Where that comes from.
Yeah, I mean, but the flip side of that is I think I'm also like constantly inspired, and that's what's fun about this job is that I think Miamians are so creative and so imaginative, and this job gets me in a position where I see that all the time, over and over. So it's just so much fun, and it just always makes me love this place more.
Yeah, you mentioned that creativity that you've seen. What are some of the ways that expresses itself during Poetry Month? Have you seen, like, that creativity, that Miami creativity, or outside Poetry Month? I mean, like, shrimp by the side of the road creative.
Right, yeah. Well, that's an aspect of it. I mean, you know, you see, you know, people come up with the most amazing businesses here, you know, in the most incredible places. You know, they carve out these spaces. Because if they don't carve them out, no one's going to hand them to them. You know, they have to go out and get it. And I love that sort of entrepreneurial spirit about this place. But also, I think just in poetry, what people have done with that Zippode form is, you know, like the one we heard today from the woman whose whole poem is just far, too far. West Kendall is too far. And she just keeps repeating it in a way, you know, and I never would have thought of that, you know, even though I also feel that West Kendall is too far.
West Kendall is also too far. That's a very accurate poem.
It's totally accurate. But, you know, and there's another poem that's just, it's basically just the word peacock over and over again. And people who live in neighborhoods with peacocks, I'm sure that resonates, you know. Yeah. Tired of seeing these things. They're always on my car and in my face. And people find these ways to use that limited number of words in such a creative way.
Well, I know that you didn't write a Zippode this year.
I did not.
Not that you will confess to, but tell us about your zip code. Tell us about the area where you live.
So I'm in 33138.
Which
I'm
is where?
Miami Shores.
Okay.
So I had kids and I basically moved to the suburbs.
Bro, that is not the suburbs. That lady in West Kendall, she can write lots of poems about the suburbs, I'm sure.
Yeah, it feels suburban to me, though, after living, like, you know, in Miami proper for a long time.
So free association, Miami Shores. What are some words? Because that was me. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm on the Miami side of 33134. What are things?
Yeah.
Chickens. Santeria at the corner, at the intersection of my house, every day a chicken in a paper bag. That was part of, that was in the original Zippode, but what a free association, Miami Shores.
How did this turn into a poetry workshop?
This is what we do here, bro. We give you the stage.
So, yeah, I mean, Miami Shores. So I feel like, you know, the cops are a lot more visible in Miami Shores than they are in other neighborhoods. They're always around.
Okay.
So that's one thing. There's a lot of dog walking, for better or for worse. I witnessed two of my neighbors' dogs get into a fight the other day.
Yikes.
Which wasn't fun.
I think we're riding the Zippo right now.
We might be. There's also the thing, you know, I walk around in my neighborhood a lot and I try to figure out which are the Airbnb houses because I know they exist, you know, and trying to figure out. One of the ways you can try and figure out is the recycling. The people who have like an absurd amount of recycling, I feel like are possibly Airbnb houses because I think maybe they're maybe taking recycling from other places. Or other house, or other Airbnb houses, and they're putting it all on the Shores.
Like a mini dumpster facility.
Like a mini dumpster, because they know the Shores recycling will pick it up. No matter how much they put there, the Shores recycling will pick it up. And I'm not sure every municipality will do that. Like, if it's not in the bin, like, no, that's your problem.
All right, so recycling, dogs fighting, visible police. By the end of this hour, we will have a P. Scott Cunningham Zippo'd, I'm convinced. You're not from Miami originally, right?
No, I'm from Boca Raton.
All right, I guess we'll give you access. How did how did you? You're born and raised in Boca Raton, so you're
born and raised in Boca. Could not wait to leave South Florida.
What's the zip code?
Counting down the days. Mine was 33432, growing up. So it was like East Boca.
Oh, you can write. I know you can write zip codes about that one.
I definitely can. I definitely can write.
You have enough scars. You have enough scars from there.
I do. No, Boca is a very nice place, but I didn't want to be there. That wasn't where I wanted to make my life. So I was away for like 8 years, living in various parts of the country, and then came back.
But you came back to Miami.
Came back to Miami, which is different. And that's what I realized is that it was different.
And so what was it about Miami that drew you here that inspires art for you?
Well, I came here for grad school, you know, at FIU to do the creative writing program. Okay. And I had literally had no expectations that I would fall in love with the city. I mean, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to grad school here. I'll do my time and then I'll go somewhere else. But I moved to South Beach. Like in a little tiny apartment off of West Avenue.
Yeah, one of our announcers here, Alyssa, she's in her 20s. She lives in a tiny 900 square foot studio where there's no washer and dryer inside.
Yep.
But you're on South Beach, baby.
But you're on South Beach. And you know, you can walk everywhere on South Beach and you know, ride your bike and things like that. And so just being there, I just kind of slowly started to fall in love with it. But I think what really hammered it home was meeting other people in the arts community here and seeing what they were doing and realizing there was this really, really vibrant community of creative people who were just doing stuff. And that's the part about Miami that I think really clinched it for me was that if you had an idea, if you wanted to do something, people were really supportive and were like, oh, great, you should do that. You know, here's how I can help. And I loved that spirit. And I think it's really unique. And I've lived in other cities, so I know it doesn't exist everywhere.
It's interesting because earlier you were talking about the entrepreneurship in Miami, and there is this improvised nature.
Yeah.
When I say Miami, I think of greater Miami-Dade, greater South. I envelop, you know, the Dade County line south because all of those areas get lumped into Miami proper, you know. But there's so much uniqueness for it. And it sounds like you carved out a space for old Miami. So what was the idea behind old Miami and this idea of kind of democratizing this kind of rarefied art form, you know?
Yeah, I think that was actually the heart of the original idea was I had been doing poetry programming for 2 to 3 years at that point before we did the festival. And so I knew if like I hosted a poetry reading, I kind of knew who would come. You know what I mean?
Same faces start showing up.
Yeah, in a great way. You know, and that's a beautiful thing. But I also, and I didn't know, but I kind of had a suspicion that that there might be more out there, you know. But I really didn't know. And so, you know, in consultation with some other people who helped me found it, particularly Tom Healy, who's still my board chair, you know, we were like, well, let's do the opposite of what a normal poetry festival is. Let's see if we can take like, you know, because a normal poetry festival is like 2 or 3 days in one place. It's readings, panels, and you're out of there. And we were like, what's the opposite of that? It's a month long. It doesn't take place in any one place. It's designed for people who would never come to that other festival if they saw it advertised somewhere, who maybe would find that super intimidating and like, I don't know what contemporary poetry is. That's definitely not for me.
Why did you think a traditional poetry festival either wouldn't work in Miami or you weren't interested in doing that?
It would work. I just wasn't interested in doing it, I think. I mean, it also played into, you know, this was around the time that Knight Foundation, who was our founding sponsor and is our founding sponsor, was doing these like random acts of culture around the city.
Okay.
Where, you know, this is like the era of like, you know, like operas popping up in markets. You know what I mean?
Okay. Kind of like flash mobs. But
yes,
with culture.
Exactly. Like cultural flash mobs. And I thought, I was like, I don't think you can do that with poetry because a random person standing up and reading a poem just sounds like a crazy person.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like with opera where you're like, oh, this person has been trained to do this. You know what I mean? So I was like, we can't do that. But what if we could use the city as a canvas? Because you can put text almost anywhere. So what if the city was a canvas for all of these poems? And as soon as we kind of hitched onto that idea, it was like, all right, well, let's try this. Like maybe nobody will care, but we're going to do it. But then the opposite happened. What I realized really quickly was that Miamians care about poetry and they know about poetry and you don't have to bring it to them. Like they already have it. And so it's really just about creating opportunities for them to express it.
When did that become apparent to you? Is it just when you got your first submissions that you
saw? Super quickly. I mean, like, you know, the first festival, we'd be doing stuff. And this happened to me over and over. We'd just be doing stuff and you'd encounter someone who cared about it. You know, who just you wouldn't expect, you know.
It kind of pushes back on the Miami has no culture idea.
Oh,
right?
I hate that. It's one of the dumbest ideas out there because it's just not true. Because when people say culture, they mean very specific things, you know. But that's not what culture is. It's only one part of culture.
In other words, people are like, you don't have enough museums. There's not enough, abstract art. Galleries.
Yeah, and ironically, we have all that too. You know what I mean? Like we also have that. I think it's just, you know, I think it's a result of the, you know, the mechanism of the city advertising itself as a destination, as a place like where you come and forget your other life, you know, and party or whatever it is. Or, you know, the real estate industry being like, this is where you create your dreams and you can start over and everything starts from scratch.
Right. Raise all these people's houses and create your your dreams on their bones.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and those forces are really powerful. And so, you know, I think the no culture thing is an unintentional result of that.
Well, we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back and talk about the many ways in which O Miami exposes Miami culture. We're talking to Scott Cunningham, who is the founder of O Miami, as we begin Poetry Month here in April. We'll be right back on Sundown. We're back on Sundown. This is Carlos Frias. And we're talking to Scott Cunningham. He's the founder of O Miami, and we're on the verge of their annual poetry festival, which runs through all of April. And what I love about O Miami's April is that you encounter poetry in all kinds of unexpected places. How did this idea come about that you could get people's attention in unexpected places?
You know, I think the first moment of it was I was living in New York City in the 90s and I was riding on the subway and I saw their, you know, they have a poetry in motion program where they put poems in the subway. And I read this short little poem. It was by Billy Collins. And it was from this poem called Hunger. And I read it once and then it stayed with me the whole day. And I kept thinking about it, you know? So I think having that experience of having been in New York City, I did not want to be a poet at that time in my life. It was not a goal. And reading a poem on the subway and having it really stay with me, I knew that that experience could work, you know? Like I knew that if you put poems out there, some people will find them and some people will find meaningful experiences from them. So I just kind of had that as an example of, you know, this can work.
Tell me, do you remember any part of that poem being on there?
You know what I remember? There's an image, because it's about hunger. And I think the way that he makes the image of hunger, it's like a boy is carrying a fox in a sack. And then at some point he realizes that the fox has escaped the sack. That's what I remember about it. And I've never looked up the poem again. I've never reread it. And in some ways, I kind of don't want to, you know, like I just want my memory of that experience more than I want the poem itself.
Because it, yeah, man, because it created this shift in you. And then, so this idea of poetry sneaking up on you is something that resonated with you. For me, it's, I always remember you guys did a poetry on a conveyor belt at a supermarket. And I'll never forget that image. And I find that it, it was confusing and disorienting and also lovely. You know, like it really just brightened a part of my day. Tell me about the different ways that you guys try to inspire that, those kind of reactions.
And that's the reaction we want. I mean, I think like, because, you know, realistically, like not everybody's going to look at it. Not everybody's going to read it. And not everybody who reads it is going to get anything out of it. So you're really looking for that one person who just needed that poem at that moment, you know? So that's a big part of it is, you know, and through volume, we just try and make as many of those happen. So it's just, there's a greater chance of it. But one of the things we realized through doing the festival, which I think was a really important shift, was that early on, we were just looking to put, like, I think what we considered to be canonical poems, you know, into public places. So whether it was like Whitman or Plath or, you know, like famous dead poets.
Sure.
You know, like what kind of what we studied in school is poetry.
Right.
And then we sort of realized that it would be more meaningful if the poems came from Miamians themselves and it was Miamians speaking to Miamians about the place that they live. And so when you're in a neighborhood and you're reading a poem from the supermarket on, you know, on the conveyor belt, that poem was written by a kid who goes to school a few miles from that supermarket. And so you're learning about your neighbors. You're learning about, you're thinking about where you live and what that means. And just kind of creating that ecosystem is really our main goal at this point.
And I'll say that some of your more powerful poems are written by children.
Absolutely.
There's this incredible one where anybody who's been to Miami has seen it. If you're flying out during the day or flying in, depending, I think you're going east. And if you look out your window on a building in Wynwood, I want to say,
yeah,
there's a poem. And it's, do you remember what's on the top of the building?
Yeah, it's a poem by, it was written who at the time, she was a third grader, and her name was Naima Marshall, and she went to Orchard Villa Elementary, and it says, "I am from a place where it does not snow."
I mean, it's just perfect. And it's, I remember you saying that kids are undefeated as poets.
They are, because what happens is everyone starts out as a poet. Like poetry is totally natural to kids. And what happens is that you forget how to do it. You grow out of it in a lot of ways because the world becomes prosaic as you get older. It's, you get caught up in all of the things that you have to do and all of the sort of social pressures that you feel like you have to conform to, you know, to get by in your day. We all learn this stuff. It's all taught to us. But the thing that we forget when we're taught that stuff is how to be a poet.
This idea that like the world appears to you in metaphor, like as a kid.
And just that like your emotions and the way that you look at the world emotionally matters, you know, and that it's important. And that freedom to like make leaps within language and think about something that is nonsensical, you know, we beat that out of ourselves and other people help us do it too, you know. And so one of the things that I love about poetry as an art form is that to write a good poem, which I think is really, really hard to do no matter how many times you've tried it, is that you really do have to let go of a lot of that stuff that we carry.
I always remember my kid, she must have been 5 years old and or 4 or 5, and her leg had fallen asleep, and she said, "Dad, my leg feels like TV."
That's genius.
I mean, and from that moment on, I realized that kids are going to have us beat forever from that point forward.
And you know what's crazy about that is I get it.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make sense, but I totally know what she's talking
yes,
about.
Yes, that static feeling. Yeah. Everything. she put everything into that. Are your kids into that? Have your kids, do you just, and being a guy who kind of who explores poetry, do you kind of just watch them naturally express themselves or do you try to teach them anything at this point?
I don't try to teach them. I mean, you know, I think we have a lot of books in our house because my wife's a writer too. And so I think just like modeling that books are important has already passed down to them. I mean, my eldest who's 6 is a consummate reader. That's all she's doing is reading. She told me the other night before bed, she was like, "Dad, I think my purpose in life is reading." And I was like, "I'm going to go have a moment by myself right now."
Right.
That's great.
I think there's something in my eye.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to teach it to them. I mean, kids are just naturally drawn to it. We do an event every year, and this year it's on April 2nd, called Poetry in Pajamas, where it's a kids' open mic, and they come in their pajamas, and they read their own poems, or they read a favorite Shel Silverstein poem or whatever. And the first time my eldest daughter did it, she was 2 or 3, and she just got up there and just said like 1 or 2 words over and over again. I think it was like the name of a Disney character or something. It was just like, I'm just going to say this word over and over again. And you know, that works. That's a poem.
That's where that kid was at that moment in her life.
Yeah.
Right there. She was Ariel, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk to me a little bit about some of the ways that you guys get these submissions? Because you guys don't breathe them into existence. You take all these things come from Miami, right? Folks sending in ideas during a call time for you guys, right?
So we do the call usually around August and September every fall, and people send in their ideas. I mean, we usually get a few hundred. And, you know, the call is pretty simple. It's like, how would you do something with poetry in April, you know, something unexpected? How would you inject poetry into a certain community or into another art form? And so, yeah, people send us their ideas, and that's more or less how the festival is built. I mean, we contribute some things ourselves, but the majority of it is just people coming to us with great ideas and us helping them to realize them and with whatever they need. And so, yeah, it's just, I mean, that's another way that I just find that Miamians are so creative, because the ideas are always incredible. The first time I went to this meeting of leaders, it was like a model UN for poetry. It was like all these leaders of poetry organizations from around the country. And we met in New Mexico and, like, you know, kind of like shared stories and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I presented the, you know, some things we'd done at the festival, and most of these people had never seen it before. And there afterwards, they were just like, how did you think of all this? And I'm like, I didn't. I just asked Miamians, and this is what they came up with, you know, because no one person could ever do this.
And I think doing it that way also lets you honor and reflect different Miami cultures and voices and backgrounds and economic statuses and races. Are there some ways that you can think of past whether they're zip codes or events that really have reflected that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first one that came to mind was a project we did a few years ago with the artists Naja Moon and Michelle Lisa Paul Saint, who came up with this project where they made umbrellas for Little Haiti. Because and if you spend time in Little Haiti, you've noticed this, that you see a lot of design district umbrellas in Little Haiti. Because they for a while, I don't know if they still do it, but the design district used to give out these really high quality umbrellas for free that had design district branding on them. And it was like a marketing effort for them. And it was genius because it was a great umbrella. Like, if you got one, you never get rid of it. But what happened is that, you know, like, people in Little Haiti would end up with these umbrellas. And so you'd see them all over. And living in Little Haiti, they always felt like, Little Haiti should have its own umbrella. Like, why do they need design district umbrellas? And so they came up with this poem in Creole, which was like from an old Creole proverb. And they put it on an umbrella. And then they just gave them out in the neighborhood. They walked around and gave out the umbrellas to everybody. And it was just really beautiful and sweet. And it was tender and loving. But, you know, it was also a statement about how Miami likes to erase places, you know, historically, yeah. Where we're unfortunately very skilled at that. So it was an argument for, you know what, like, people live here, you know, and they have their own cultures, and we should respect that.
And they become visible when you do something like that. They become very obvious.
Yeah.
Rather. Are there some ideas that you've gotten that are like really ambitious, but you haven't figured out how to put on just yet?
Oh man. Yes. Always. I mean, this is my dream project is, I love basketball. As I think you know, I'm a big Heat fan.
Yeah, your Twitter is just like, it's just a Heat stan Twitter.
And it's mostly just, you know, it's a sad sports fan who's just like caught up in the moment, you know, like, I'm there for the highs, I'm there for the lows. All my opinions are dime a dozen. They're not sophisticated at all. Totally reactionary.
In other words, like every fan.
Like everybody else, yeah. But I've always, and I love basketball courts, and I love basketball court design. And so I've always wanted to do a design of the Heat court that had a poem in the center circle.
Oh, man. And you know what? They're looking for a sponsor, man. Oh, Miami's right across the street. The billboard's right across the street.
Let us name the arena. We'll come up with a poetic name for the arena.
What if you could name the arena for a month during Poetry Month? Hey, Pat Riley.
That's such a great idea.
Name the arena for a month and have like a, you know, that would be something else.
I love that idea. Yeah. I love that. And we would name it. Like what we would do is we would let like a third grader name it, you know? Like,
but yeah, that'd be perfect. It would just be like arena face.
Yeah. Right. So the poem I want to put in the center circle was written by an elementary school kid. And it's just the line, "I was raised by the rain."
Oh, man. That's
and
so
just,
great.
Yeah. So I'm just putting that out there. If Miami Heat are listening.
They're listening. They're fans. What has been one of your most ambitious ones that you were able to pull off that you were like, yes, we nailed that one?
Well, definitely the rooftop one you talked about. Like, I mean, that took us over 2 years because when the artist Randy Berman proposed it to us, I was like, this is great, but I don't know how to do this. You know, like we don't, I can't afford it and I had no idea how to pull it off. But with time and, you know, energy.
How did you pull it off? What pieces came together that were important? Because I think, like, people are saying, I'm sure people out there thinking, how can I help some of these things happen in the world, you know?
Well, I mean, and part of it was, like, donations, you know, and
yeah, give money usually solves the problem.
money solves a lot of problems, no doubt. But also the, you know, the guy who painted it, like, I mean, he would probably never do it again because it was too much work.
You know what? Like all great art, sometimes once is enough.
Once is enough.
Yeah.
But also we figured out too late that roof, the roof of that building, it's like tiny little rocks and it just sucks the paint up.
So you had to use a ton of
paint.
We had to use so much paint.
And it was mostly like, I mean, some of us chipped in and volunteered and did some painting. But it was mostly this one guy just up there, like, sweating it out. And
but the payoff is that how many years later, we're still talking about it.
We're still talking about it. And people are like, drone photographers are always posting it, you know, because it's as soon as someone finds it, they're like, oh, wow. And they post it again. And I love that it's like, it's for a lot of people, it's a mystery. Like, how did it get there? Who said it? Where did it come from? You know, and I love the mysterious part about it. To me, that's poetic.
Well, I think this is a good spot to take a little bit of a break because I want to come back and talk about some of the innovative ways that you're going to show off this year. We're talking with Scott Cunningham, who's the founder of Oh Miami, and we're looking forward to the annual poetry festival throughout the month of April. We'll be back on Sundial in a minute. We're back on Sundial. This is Carlos Frias, and we're with Scott Cunningham, who is the founder of Oh Miami. And this month, like every month, you guys put on surprise ways where poetry finds you throughout Miami. Talk to me about some of the activations this year. I hate that word activations, but activations, displays. Tell me about some of the things that you're most excited to have people run into.
Definitely. So there's the biggest project we've ever done. We're doing on Miami Beach this year in partnership with the city of Miami Beach. There's two water towers that are gigantic and they're adjacent to the Miami Beach Senior High football field.
Okay.
And we invited this collective from Spain called Boa Mistura to come and paint the water towers. And so, but the process was first is we went into Beach High and taught some poetry classes to the kids, collected about 300 poems from them, gave the 300 poems to the artist Boa Mistura, who then picked their favorite line out of all of that, which they're then putting on the towers. One tower will have the line in English and the other tower will have the line in Spanish. And the coolest part about it is that the student whose poem was selected, her name's Valentina. She's a sophomore. She moved here from Argentina a year ago. And I think it was like, maybe it's like still finding her way in Miami, like still trying to feel like, is this my home now? And going through that transition. And that's what her poem was about. And it was really heartfelt. And so, you know, her having this line of her work, like in a really visible place, I think is, you know, altered her relationship to Miami in some way. So it was just really cool to see her excited about it and go through that whole process. So they'll start painting on April 11th or 10th. And then it's going to take them a month to paint it. That's how big the water towers are.
I mean, I think a lot of Miami people, especially kids, can relate to something like that, to landing in a new place and feeling out of place. It's somehow it feels familiar, but it feels foreign in every other way. Do we know what her poem is, or do we have to wait?
It's the line is, "Finding my home in every voice that I hear."
Wow. That's really lovely.
Yeah.
And I love that kind of teamwork, because when you started to say we found a company in Spain, I was like, oh, I thought this was a local thing. And I was ready to hate on it. And yeah. I think something interesting you did there is you found a way to bring national attention and national interest to something that is exclusively or rather extremely local.
And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to work with Bohemian Stories, because that's how they work. When they go to a place, they immediately, you know, involve themselves with the community, talk to people, and the work that they do always comes out of some community kind of activation. So it's never them imposing an idea upon the local community. It always has to come from the people themselves. And so that's seeing their projects, we're like, oh, that's the way we work too. That's, you know, we would be perfect to work together. And normally people also paint with them. Like they engage the community to paint. Because of the water towers and how they're positioned, we can't really do that this time. But we are going to create some time and space for the students themselves to do some paintings, which I'm really excited about.
Very cool. How long will that be up or stay up?
Hopefully a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say that's one that's worth keeping up for more than a month.
I hope so. It's all up to the city. But they, you know, when we presented it to them, the city of Miami Beach was super excited about it, totally supportive. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be there a while.
Very cool. Now, that's obviously one that's big and obvious, but you have a lot that are small and surprising. Like there's one that I saw that's like maybe you're on like a carton of ice cream.
Yeah, there's an ice cream place down south called Sweet Melody.
Yep. Oh, they have a spot in Coral Gables too. Right? Yeah, so that's the one that I frequent because
it's great. Love them. It's like a family business, and so there'll be kids' poems on their ice cream pints with special flavors that are inspired by the poems themselves.
Oh, cool. What are some other ones?
So one I really like and that I think you'll like too is there's an artist who goes by West of Chester.
I have seen her stuff.
Yeah, it's like it's always illustrations or paintings. I'm not actually sure how she does them, but they're always like those nostalgic places in Miami, you know?
They're like nostalgic, iconic places that are like west of the turnpike. Yeah. West of the Palmetto.
Yeah.
West of Westchester. It's great.
And exactly.
She just happened. That's how it seemed. Like all of a sudden she's all over my social media with like Frankie's Pizza and the bowling alley, Bird Bowl. Whatever.
Yep. Yeah, no, the stuff that she does is really beautiful and incredible. And so she came up with this idea that she's going to be bringing an activation that she'll be bringing to different places. And it's called Palacios de los Recuerdos.
Oh, Palacio de los Recuerdos. I love that.
Thank you for saying it.
A play on Palacio de los Jugos.
Exactly, exactly. And it actually is like, I think it's a model of like a tiny Palacio de los Jugos in some way. That. But the whole idea is that people are going to come and like write their memories and stick them in the tiny Palacio. So.
And then do they burn it in effigy like they do Burning Man?
I don't think so. I think she has some sort of plan, you know, for how this is all going to come together. But I just loved that concept, and so beautiful.
So that artist is
Melissa Gutierrez.
All right, great. So
West of Chester.
Perfect.
Yeah, and the Instagram feed is beautiful. Like if you love Miami, you will just get lost in it. It's gorgeous.
And it's great because there are so many, we've already talked about so many different ways of approaching poetry, right? And, mm-hmm. and approaching art, the art form in this month. What was one where there were poets reciting their poems through megaphones at one year, like a couple years back?
Yeah. We've done that a few different ways. We did it once on the beach, on Miami Beach, like where they did readings like on the lifeguard stands with megaphones. But then there's an artist named Cesar Segovia who's done it. He's doing it this year again with us, but he's done it before where, he does them in public with megaphones. And he's a genius. He's brilliant.
Are there a couple others that stand out in your mind that you're just really excited to see this month?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is an oldie but a goodie, and it's actually my wife's project.
That's fine.
It's proved so popular that it just keeps coming back because people keep asking for it. But it's called Poetry Parking Tickets. It's in the name. So we make parking tickets that look just like Miami-Dade parking tickets, but they have poems on them by elementary school kids in Miami. And we ticket cars in April. But I think the most effective use of the poetry parking ticket is giving them out to people and say, hey, ticket a friend. You know,
that's so great. And, you know, I think the next part of that is you have to have hidden camera when people encounter the ticket.
Yeah.
Because I imagine that there's like 30 seconds of rage, and then they grab it.
Yep.
And
always
are surprised. Have you ever tried to experience any of that?
Oh, I've seen it happen. Yeah, a bunch of times. And it always is. Someone's like confused or upset, and then they burst out laughing. You know, they're just like, oh, because there's like that relief of, okay, I don't have a ticket. This isn't going to ruin my day. And it's a poem. But yeah, it's a somewhat dangerous enterprise, which is why now I say, you know what, ticket your friend. You're responsible for this. You know?
You've taken yourself out of the right. out of the dangerous loop. You're standing out of the line of fire, so to speak. You know, this is what you guys do during the year, during this month. But throughout the year, O Miami finds different ways to tell the story of Miami. And in that, you're publishing also, right?
We are, yeah. So we publish books whenever we can cobble some money together to do it. And the books that we publish are basically, the thought process is, would this get published somewhere else, you know?
And if it doesn't.
And if the answer is no, yeah, then we're interested, you know? So we did a trilogy of books that we called the Miami Trilogy that was all anthologies of Miamians, some professional writers, most not. And each book tackled a different, I think, an issue that we think is important to the future of Miami. So there's one on transit, one on sea level rise, and one on gun violence. And each one was meant to just gather as many voices on that topic as possible. They were all really different. But that's what we want to be doing with the books, is documenting this place. Because as you said before, it is always changing. You know, and if we did that transit book, which we did, you know, 5 years ago now, we did it now, it would be totally different. You know, and I think one of the things that's great about a book as a technology is that it does freeze things in time.
It's a Polaroid, yeah.
It's a Polaroid, you know, and in a place where we're really good at forgetting our own history, both on purpose and by accident, we think having those books that document these moments and how people felt is really important.
The last one you guys published was More Than What Happened,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like an anthology of gun violence in Miami, and it's not just people who were killed, but those who survive and those who survive them.
Mm-hmm.
I submitted a story to that, and the editor, Nadej Green, was on our show. So, folks, if you're listening to this and you want to hear that interview, our podcast is available on all your apps. Just look for WLRN Sundial. You mentioned that poetry is hardwired to Miami. Can you talk about what that means?
I think, you know, when you say that, what comes to mind is, you know, most people in Miami are from somewhere else. And generally speaking, they're from places where poetry is much more central to the cultural identity than it is in the United States. So I think that, you know, what I've found going around Miami is that you don't have to explain to people that poetry is important. They already believe it, you know, because they come from places where poets are inextricably tied to, and their work is, it's who you are. So they just get it instantly, you know. But I think it's also that improvisational thing that we talked about earlier, where people are just used to going with the flow here. They're used to things that are strange and don't make sense, you know, and that's their daily lives.
Listen, that was my dad. My entire growing up was, you know, he would say these little poesias. And just like he's out in the yard and he encounters a frog and he writes a little piece of poetry about it. You know, and it's not, I don't know if, you know, we would call it traditional poetry, but it's like you said, it's that improvisational nature of the city and the people who are here.
Yeah, and it's such a good, I think, practice for living, you know. And one of the reasons I became a poet is because my grandmother, kind of in a similar way, she wrote haiku. You know, it was just like one of the ways that she moved through the world is she would just jot down her little haikus. And she often wrote them in the margins of her books, you know, so... and I have some real books, and there's her poems just like written in there.
So she would be reading a section of a book, and it would inspire a poetry and haiku.
Yeah, or she'd be reading a book, and she'd look up and look out the window, and something would strike her, and she'd write that down, you know?
Oh, that's so beautiful. And is that how you encounter poetry in your life? Is that where it first kind of revealed itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was always drawn to it, for sure. It was something that I was always interested in, even before I kind of realized that I wanted to devote my life to it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's that impulse to, and I, as I get older, I find it's harder to do, but just that impulse to be open to what's happening around you and be willing to feel it and process it, you know, which as you get older, and it does get harder. It really does.
Did your grandmother publish any poetry or anything?
Never. Never published any poetry, never took a workshop, never, you know, and that's another, when you were asking me earlier about how do you know this might work, and that was another thing that was in my mind, is that I know there's people like my grandmother out there who, poetry was a huge part of their lives, but you would never know it, you know, unless you broke the ice first.
What do you think having something like this does for a city? What do you think it does for Miami to be able to have a month where you let people... let people open up a little bit?
Well, I can only say what I hope it does, you know. Sure. But my hope with it, and I think everyone who's involved with the organization's hope, is that it lets people speak for themselves. You know, it creates time and space for Miamians to talk to each other. You know, most people don't get the microphone or the billboard in this town. I mean, there's a very rarefied group of people who get to decide, you know, what stories are written about here, what text is on the, you know, this surface, who is on TV, things like that. It's, you know, it's ultimately a small group of people, and it's not representative of all of us. It could never be, you know, no matter how great those people are. And so what I hope the festival does is that it opens up that conversation, even if it's only for a month.
What are ways that over the years you've tried to tap into different communities? Because like you said, poetry, the art form itself, can feel exclusive. What are ways that you've tried to engage different communities to tell you the poetry around them and to tell you different ways to reveal that?
Well, the main way we do it is throughout the years through our education program. We're teaching poetry in schools consistently. We're doing projects that bring us into community centers and into partnerships with different organizations that are rooted in neighborhoods. And so that's collaboration is the main thing, you know, because we never want to go to a place and be prescriptive or tell people how to feel or how to act or anything like that. We always want to be partnering with people who are from that neighborhood, who know what the concerns are. And so poetry can be an element that comes in organically. And then also, like, there's a hook for people. Like, there's some way we're doing this where it feels safe and familiar. You know, and for some people that is a form like the zip code, where it's okay, it's about you decide the zip code and then you only have so many words, and it's about your place. And so it's not like here's a blank piece of paper, write whatever you want, but you know, we're giving you a little more to work with. Or in other cases, it's, you know, we'll do something where poetry is mixed with film, and you know, someone who's into movies, all of a sudden that can become the entry point into poetry. So always attaching it to something that people already find meaningful, so that there's a way in for them that feels familiar.
And one way in is through doing your own Zipode. Right now, if you can submit through March 22nd, you can submit your own Zipode. And those are a little bit of poetry about the zip code that you're in. Scott, thank you so much for making the time and coming in to talk about one of our favorite months.
Thanks so much, Carlos. This is so much fun.
And that's Sundial for Wednesday, March 22nd. Leslie Ovalle-Atkinson is our lead producer. Elisa Baena is our producer and social media editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's VP of News. And Katie Munoz is our director of live programming. Peter J. Mertz is WLRN's vice president of radio and Sundial's engineer. Our theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Balo at gobalo.com. You can download a podcast of this program. Just search for WLRN Sundial on your podcast app. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a South Florida legend, Bee Hines. She was the first black female reporter at the Miami Herald, and she still works for the paper as a columnist. We talk about her time growing up in Miami, her career, and finding hope during a recent tour of Florida black history. I'm Carlos Frias. Thanks for listening.